This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 119, where we're going to talk about Google winning deals, Microsoft opening data centers, SharePoint 2016 RTMing, and other cloud news. Recorded live March 16th, 2016.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid is a Microsoft Gold partner whose mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of technology. Valid is always on the lookout for consultants, architects, and engineers. Do you know Azure, BI, and Analytics, .NET, Office 365, or SharePoint? Look them up on Valid.nl.
Good afternoon, AC.
Hey, how's it going?
We're in the same place, buddy.
This is a little strange. In a hotel room, in my room, but everything's cool. We're just recording. It's quiet.
It's actually really nice to be in the same location for a change.
It is nice. It's nice to... I'm out here in Seattle for the week recording some content for MVA. So spent the whole morning, or actually spent the whole day in the studio. So yes, yeah, nice that we could do this in the same place at one, for once. Or I guess we've done it a few times.
So we're recording a show and you've spent all day recording a show.
Yeah, I've six individual shows today. I've got seven more to do the next 2 days.
Wow. Well, we'll try and keep this one short so you don't die of recording boredom. But, we've got some pretty cool cloud news to go through today.
Epic waves, man.
Yeah.
Epic waves.
Pretty massive. What do you want to kick off with?
I don't know, man. We have four clouds in this one that we got to talk about here. So this is like an Overcast show.
If you're listening to this on Overcast, this is an Overcast on Overcast.
This is an Overcast show on Overcast. So there's not much sun here.
Why don't we kick off with Google? Because we've got a couple of news items about Google's moves in recent weeks, but they're making some big news. Today we just heard that Google scored a win as Apple as a customer.
Yeah, they did.
For iCloud. And this came completely out of the blue to me. I felt like Apple had been a Microsoft and Amazon customer for a long time for iCloud. So they run a lot of their iCloud infrastructure on AWS and Azure. Quite a big portion, by the looks of it, on AWS, and it looks like they may have lost that.
Yeah, I was, or at least part of it too. So the news was just breaking this afternoon. So just in the last few hours that we saw here, you know, since 2011, it's been kind of known that Azure was a host for iCloud, but I thought that they were the host, and now it looks like estimates were somewhere in the $1 billion range for how much they were spending with AWS. So that's with a B.
Like, I wonder what credit card that goes on.
Yeah, probably an Amex. Somebody's getting some sweet reward points on that one.
No joke.
But what's interesting about this one, so they were saying the estimates have been around $1 billion is what they were spending with AWS. The deal is reported to be between $400 and $600 million, but nobody knows if that's the total size of the deal, if that's just an annual spend or whatever it is. But you know what? There's something about this article that I read about in Business Insider that we put in Flipboard. We may not see the last of these because... So a couple months ago, about 4 months, Google convinced someone, Enterprise Queen Diane Greene, to come lead the fledgling cloud computing business. And we've now seen her nail Spotify, and we've also seen her bring iCloud over to the Google Cloud platform. So this will be interesting to see what else is coming from this, but definitely a huge win for the Google Cloud platform. And I guess now you've seen two pretty big hits, because we had another bit of AWS negative news too that we're going to talk about here this week as well.
Yes, exactly. It would be interesting to see how many more deals like this they win over, because if they're out pitching for a lot of business and dropping their pants on the costs and just to get some big names, then like you said, this may not be the last time we see that.
Yeah. So we saw Spotify leave AWS and go over to Google Cloud, right?
No, to their own.
Oh, from their own to Google Cloud?
They were going...
Well, they went to Google Cloud.
So they went to Google Cloud. That's right. Dropbox, on the other hand.
Yeah, that's the other bit of news. Dropbox.
They're moving off AWS and going to their own infrastructure.
For the most part. I saw that they're still doing international customers. They're still going to stay in AWS.
Gotcha.
But yeah, they're so big, and they just decided that it was more cost effective to go in-house. So I've seen a couple of deals like that where some companies have decided that the cost of the cloud is it's great for startups, but it can be a little bit better when you get to massive scale. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess you've got to have the cost of all the experienced people to be able to build your own infrastructure of that scale, run it. You've got all the equipment, obviously. You've got the data centers. You've got there must be some tipping point where it starts to make sense, right? When when you're just using so much scale, or you require so much scale that it's cheaper just to do it yourself. And if you read the article we posted in Flipboard about Dropbox moving off AWS for the most part and going to their own stuff, they're actually building their own servers, building out their own infrastructure specifically for hosting all these files, right? So they're able to really scope down the job that their cloud does to do it just perfectly for them, right?
Yeah.
At least that's the story they're pitching.
Yeah.
And they think they can do it in a very cost-effective manner. So so that's pretty interesting. We've got one going from one cloud to another.
Yeah.
And one leaving the cloud entirely and going, well, their own cloud, right? They're building their own. So it's all moving and shaking.
Amazon has had a lot. Yeah, Amazon's really interesting news here. So you had Amazon. I thought that Spotify had gone from Amazon over to Google Cloud.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then so now we had a significant part of iCloud go from Amazon over to Google Cloud. We've seen Dropbox leave AWS as well. So there's three exodus. But we saw, what was it, Netflix announced, like what we talked about sometime in the last month or so, when Netflix just completed bringing all of their stuff to 100% AWS cloud. So Amazon, like in the whole world of news there. So it's interesting. Interesting stuff there.
There's a lot going on. Maybe, well, the big loser out of this is AWS right now, right?
They seems
seem to be
like
losing
it,
customers, not gaining them. So,
well, the big one is the Google Cloud Platform. I mean, those are two huge profile wins. I mean, even if they're dropping their pants on the cost, those are some really big customers to have on their platform.
Yeah. Now, speaking of expanding clouds, Microsoft released some new clouds.
They did. They did. Was it a cloud service in Canada and Germany and DOD?
Yeah, so they've got some new data centers, or some new regions, I should say, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying they're bringing the total amount of Azure regions to 30, which is just ridiculous. Like, being able to choose where your data lives, you know, between 30 different regions now is very meaningful, right? Because if you've got data sovereignty problems, you need a lot of this choice about where to put stuff. And they're enhancing their cloud capabilities or the cloud offerings in Canada and Germany. Interestingly enough, the German data center is going to be run by a third party. So
a German telecom.
Yeah, exactly. Now, this is the same way that Office 365 is run in China.
Mm.
It's run by another company, not Microsoft. And that's the way that they get around data sovereignty rules in those countries, or in China, it's got to do with the ability to run, you know, foreigners running companies in China, but they effectively outsource running it to another company, and they're the primary lead on running it. So it looks like that will be happening in Germany, and that just makes sense. German laws are much more stringent and tight around who's running what and who's got access to what. So it kind of makes sense for this to be done. And I'd say this is a big investment on Microsoft's part that will pay off in the long run for them. I'm very bullish about this strategy because these issues are only going to get more and more complicated as we have things like the iPhone, you know, encryption scandal and all this sort of stuff about where your data lives and who's got access to it. So they're spending a lot of money on it now, and hopefully it'll pay off for them in the long run.
Yeah, I remember when they announced this in the last couple of months or so, and it's a really creative solution. To be able to have your foot in that business or in that region, to be able to provide those same services that you provide everyone else, all your other Azure customers. It's a really cool, creative solution to get around and to satisfy all the German data sovereignty and data privacy and all that stuff by basically saying, here's somebody else do this for us. It's a really cool solution.
I, as an ISV, somebody building software, I feel really good about this too, because it means when we want to service customers in different parts of the world and we've got a lot of data to fly back and forth and processing, we don't want to be bringing it all back to the West Coast of the States, right? We want to be deploying parts of our application in parts of the world that make sense for our customers. So it gives us lots of flexibility too, which is pretty slick.
It really is. Just the ability of what this permits you to do in terms of architecting a system and having things just kind of running all over the place and then scaling all over the place based on where the work is being done. So, I mean, if your stuff is all being done like in where, you know, where the sun is, you can sit there and say, I can sun down certain parts of my operations in Germany when it gets dark in Germany, and I don't have as much of a load on my system, but then I can scale it up over on the West Coast and don't have to have it, you know, we're a 24-hour business. Well, yeah, but you're not 24 hours all over the world. You're 24 hours, you know, collectively across the world, but, you know, different regions. So it's kind of cool. You can scale things along and not have extra capacity all over the place.
Yeah. So along with Germany and Canada, there was also two new regions specifically for the government, or the Azure government cloud for the US DOD, East and West. So these are segmented regions. They meet different DOD standards and around security and all sorts of requirements, everything from physical security through to data security, obviously, for the DOD. And it made me wonder. I was like, I wonder if these Azure DOD regions are also linked to SQL on Azure somehow, because DOD is a big user of Red Hat, a big user of SQL, and they want them to be a big user of Azure. So
Linux,
the three go hand in hand nicely.
Yeah, I found this article interesting because it's talked about the part of the DOD that I used to work for with DISA. So Impact 5 is what they're going to meet their standards with it. I remember I was working with some of that stuff in terms of back in the day of securing IIS and SQL boxes for certain impact levels as well. So it was that was a fun time. But
hey, so maybe they'll be running Red Hat Linux with SQL Server in an Azure DoD region. That's pretty cool.
It is very cool. It's very cool. There was another big bit of news. I guess we're not to say that. I don't want to hold the best for last, but I'll hold on to it for a second. I saw a bunch of blog posts come out on the Exchange blog about a bunch of API breaking changes that they're making. And it looks like they're all happening to the beta endpoint, but it's happening to the mail endpoint, to the contacts endpoint. And it's a lot of renaming of properties, deleting of properties, adding new properties, kind of a lot of refactoring stuff. And a lot of it looks like it's trying to, as you said, rationalize a lot of it for the Microsoft Graph API, but lots of changes that are definitely going to impact customers that have already written stuff to work against these different endpoints. So it might be a little bit tricky for some people coming up. I'm sure we'll learn. There's like three or four blog posts that I flipped in the Flipboard, and I would suspect you'll find even this discussed even more at Build coming up in a couple weeks.
The good bit is now that they've got versioning in their API, this makes things a lot easier, right? It means that if you're building apps against the V1 API, that when they release these breaking changes from the beta endpoint, they won't release them into the V1 API. They'll release them into the V2 API.
They're supposed to.
Or the V3 API, or whatever it happens to be at the time. So
yeah.
Theoretically, all going well, your apps will continue to run on V1, but you definitely want to be looking at the beta endpoint and starting to design with those changes in mind if you're planning on releasing with the V2 or subsequent API releases.
Yeah, definitely. That's going to be might trip up some people, but hopefully it should make it nice and clean like that. So
yeah, it's nice to see them doing a bit of, I think a lot of the name changes specifically are like reducing confusing naming, right?
Yep.
And getting consistency across the Microsoft Graph endpoints as well as the Outlook APIs directly. So I think it all makes sense, but it means that there'll be a little bit of developer pain and renaming of things.
Yeah, and just to give you an idea of it, I mean, like some stuff they're doing is that, you know, for the ID that you would get for a user ID, previously it was the ID, it was your email address of the user, but I mean, email addresses can change.
Yeah.
So what they did is they changed it to where the ID of a user is now in the format of the GUID of the user at GUID of the AD tenant. So,
yeah.
I mean, you look at the user ID now you're not going to figure out what it is,
yeah,
but you can look it up. So it's now the ID of the user object in at ID of it, the tenant ID that it's in. And then other name changes like folder entity was named to mail folder, folders property on the user is now mail folders. Those look like changes that because of the graph, you want to be able to have folders inside of like OneDrive for Business in the files bit. So it does look like it's trying to make things make a little more sense across things.
Yeah.
Some of the names are interesting, like date time sent is being renamed to sent date time. Date time last delivered is being renamed to last delivered date time.
Yeah, I think there's there is an effort going on at Microsoft called the One API, or something along those lines. And they're trying to come up with standards and ways to make APIs consistent across products and stuff. So maybe some of this is coming out of that.
Yeah, I've been working with that with the Partner Center stuff because it all supposed to meet the One API. And so learning a lot about how they you have to do request IDs and correlation IDs and all that stuff. So
yeah.
Hey, the big news. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are starting to get have heard about already. But you want to throw this one out?
Sure. If you're on-prem with SharePoint, you got a new release coming.
Yeah, SharePoint 2016.
SharePoint 2016 has gone RTM. And at this point, what that means is the bits are done and bits have been declared. And in fact, today you can go download the trial install bits from the Microsoft Download Center. But for those customers with MSDN and volume licensing and things like that, those bits, as far as I'm aware, are still not out on those in those download locations yet, but at least you can go grab the trial bits and you know start having a play around with it. So we're thinking we're going to do an entire show just based around SharePoint 2016 going RTM and what that means. And we'll get some guests on the show for that as well. So we'll dive into it in a lot more detail, but we've linked off to the blog post up on Office Blogs. I would summarize this release in a nutshell as a couple of things for end users, but mostly for IT pros.
From the little I know about it, that's what I've seen as well. I haven't seen anything for devs. A lot of it is to make it easier from stuff that Microsoft has learned hosting SharePoint and Office 365. So a lot of changes that are really going to be around the IT pro side. It's definitely a big release for them. It's been 3 years since the last release. They're holding true to their commitment. I did think, you know, I got to give them a hat tip for their geeky side of going RTM and announcing it on March the 14th, so Pi Day, right? Yep. 3.14. Yeah. And they're doing a live event on May the 4th. So May the 4th be with you.
Yep, perfect.
So nice little move on that part.
I do love the geeky side of that. And that's a virtual event, so you'll be able to tune in on that online. And in the past, some of these announcements would have been at SharePoint conference, but of course that is no more. So it's going to be an online event, and Jeff Tepper will be leading the charge for that, no doubt. He's the corporate vice president for OneDrive and SharePoint, and it's his team that go and build this stuff. So as I understand it, there are going to be more tidbits beyond news just about the RTM release, and that they'll be talking about the future of SharePoint going forward as well. And so no doubt they'll start talking about some new features and things they're working on for SharePoint then. So they haven't popped all of their news in this blog post. This is just about the RTM release, but they're going to address what's next in this virtual event as well.
Yeah, there's some, I saw that too, where they said that you're going to get a number of sessions following the keynote, be a number of sessions detailing the new innovations along with a sneak peek demos of what's coming. Interesting there. So
the way I read this, here's the cynic in me. There's not much for end users in this release of SharePoint. Let's put it that way. Right? There's a couple of little things. There's the app launcher and a bunch of hybrid stuff between SharePoint and Office 365. But I think they're giving a bit of a sneak peek into what's coming next, because let's be frank, there's not a lot in this one. At least for end users. I'm pretty harsh, but for IT pros, there's a lot that's changed. But for end users, there's not a whole lot. So yeah. I think they're going to show us what's coming next. And I would expect more visible changes in what's coming next than in the 2016 RTM bits.
Gotcha. Well, it'll be interesting to see what they talk about on the 4th. So we definitely need to get some people on the show to talk about, you know, what is new in here, what the big highlights are with 2016, because first and foremost, I'm a dev. I know you are too.
Yeah.
But I'm also squarely focused on hosted stuff and cloud stuff. So not to say I don't care about it, but it's just not the focus for me right now. So I've totally missed all this stuff of 2016. Yeah. And not trying to dismiss it. I understand it's very important to a lot of people and on-prem stuff. So we definitely are going to find some knowledgeable people to come and talk about it, and not like all the blog posts you saw that came out right when they did the first previews, and people put a lot of inaccurate blog posts out. Yep. So.
Yeah, I don't think we're the experts to talk about this one any longer. So we'll get a couple of people on the show to talk about that. But this is interesting because it wasn't that long ago that people were, you know, crying for blood that there was never going to be another SharePoint on-prem release. and that it was the biggest mistake Microsoft was going to make, and nobody trusted Tepper when he got on stage and said, we're going to do another on-prem release and all that sort of stuff. And there was just so much FUD, so much FUD going around. So they've done it, and they've also got Tepper, Jeff Tepper, talking on the Twitters about it not being the last one either. So we will see, but hopefully we'll learn more in May.
Oh, I'm sure we will. Sure will. Be interesting to see.
I won't be upgrading any of my boxes because Microsoft does that for me in the cloud.
About to say, I don't have any more SharePoint VMs.
But hey, we have a good crew of people that do this stuff every day still. So so we will talk to them about it.
Absolutely, it's important. Customers spend a significant amount of money on prem, and it's an important thing. And so,
but it's still by far and away the most popular choice, right? So
absolutely. Cool.
Hey, one more thing.
Uh-oh.
I know you're an Evernote user.
Oh, have you looked at this? I was wondering if we were going to bring this one up.
Yeah. I thought I'd just sneak it in there because I know you love this, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I know you're an Evernote user, but Microsoft released a migration tool from Evernote to OneNote. And apparently it's a Windows app right now, only Windows, but they're going to bring it to, I think they said iOS and OS X in due course. Have you had a chance to look at it yet? Or?
Yep.
That doesn't sound promising.
No, I would say is if I'll give you my take on it, and I'm not the only one to say this. There's another tool that's out there. It's on SourceForge. It's got a way of, you can download it to its Windows client. They can just suck things in, and from basically this looks like different lipstick on that pig. It doesn't do anything of what you would want it to do with tags.
No.
It will, when it imports everything. First, it is painfully slow. If you have some of the tests I saw some people run, I killed it the first two times, created a new notebook, threw some notes in there, and did one import, and was like, it's not what I want.
What's slow about it?
I don't know, but it is painfully slow. Like, I think I put in like 10 notes, and it was taking on the magnitude of like almost a minute or two for it to run.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
On a Surface Pro 4. So on an i5 Surface Pro 4, that wasn't doing anything else. It took way too long. So I've got notebooks that have like a couple hundred notes in it.
So is it sucking from Evernote?
Yeah.
And then, is it pushing to OneNote in the cloud directly, or is it pushing it to the local OneNote client?
I was not clear on that. I wasn't clear on it because none of the notes that I have are just local. They're cloud as well. So the second I saw it start spinning it, it started doing the refresh. But the things that are really frustrating to me is that when it was doing the import, it had the same problem this free tool from SourceForge had, which is it would look at each note with the different tags, and it would create different sections for each one of the tags. Mm-hmm. And if you had multiple tags on your Evernote note, that note would be created as multiple entries in your OneNote notebook. So you still have to go in.
So it makes multiple copies.
Multiple copies of the same note. And so now you have to go in to Evernote. If you wanted, this is the way I was doing it right now, was to go in and set all of your notes to just have one tag. You have to find all the ones that have duplicate tags.
That's terrible.
Dumb it down. And then when you import them, then they'll all go into one section. Then you can move them around from there. From what I've seen in the tool and what I've seen other people say as well, it's incredibly disappointing. This isn't even like, they call it a preview. This isn't even a preview. This is, I hate to say it like this, but there's another P word that I would use for it. But it's very frustrating. It's very frustrating because I've been really hoping for something like this. I want to move over. This tool doesn't do anything to help that process. So it's very disappointing, and they should have held on to it and gotten a lot farther along before they did this.
Oh, dear.
We'd really like if they just take what they've done and put it in GitHub and open source it and put a team around it, just say, or put some people around it and say, let's get the community going on it and try to get a couple MVPs out of it. I don't know. I mean,
I mean, the multi-tag thing's interesting. They should let you pick and choose some options.
Yeah.
How you want to import that. I think a lot of sense goes in like putting the tags into the note itself and just dumping all the notes in the same section. Mm. That could be one option.
Yep.
Or you could decide to split it up by, you know, the first tag or multiple tags or what have you. So maybe some configurability would make it a little more useful.
Yeah. I mean, what I envision is a tool that, I don't know if you remember back from the day, a tool called Metalogix, was it Metalogix? Yeah, Metalogix Migration Manager, where when you would migrate from one site to another site in CMS or to SharePoint, and you'd be able to pick content and say, this content will go here and this content will go here. And you could see the mapping of where it would go and see tests and stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I would love to have for something like this. I'd love to spend, I wouldn't love to do it, but I would like to spend a day mapping out the content, migrating into OneNote, But I mean, that's a full blown project somebody's going to build. And I mean, for to me, I look at one time tools like that and just say, I mean, I wouldn't spend more. I'd spend like $40 or $50 on it. But how many times are you going to sell that to actually get your return on investment?
Yeah. So somebody could do it as a complete cloud tool, right? Because they're both cloud apps. So
it seems like it.
No download, just sign in, migrate, blah, blah, blah. Even let it running, leave it running for a couple of days, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems like an opportunity to me, but whatever.
Cool. Well, that's all the news for today. I know this is a shorter show. We're going to save up a long one for talking about SharePoint some more. So, but good to cover the news. We've got some cloud migration and Dropbox and AWS and Google and Azure news.
Yep.
Some Apple stuff thrown in there, some Outlook pieces, some OneNote pieces, and obviously the SharePoint stuff. So good to catch everybody up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we're off next week because I'm off and you're off as well, or we got challenge on scheduling and stuff, but, and I'm sure that there'll be, hopefully we can get together and talk something about the following week is going to be build. And
lots of news, I'm sure.
Probably should punt and record late in the week than we normally do on that one, because I'm sure we'll have not only that show from that week, but I'm sure we'll have lots of follow-ups.
Absolutely. That'll be fun. It's going to be a good time for developers, I suspect.
Absolutely. Cool, man.
Cool. Well, great to see you in person.
Yeah, man. Good time. So got a good show going again.
Have a next one.
Yeah, bye, man. You too.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.